This is Monitor on WRRS. I'm Charlie Van Sant, and it's great to have you with us. Monitor is a show about radio, broadcasting history, amateur radio, AM, FM, shortwave, and more.
This is Glenn Hauser with World of Radio, 1980. LRA-36 Antarctica continues to be active, apparently only on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I was not able to hear it on Tuesday, April 30th in the morning, but I could detect a just barely audible carrier on Thursday, May 2nd at 14:05, measured on 15475.971.
Today, a visit with Glenn Hauser, host of World of Radio. It's a program which is heard around the world on shortwave stations and on local stations here in the U.S. Glenn has over 2,000 shows to his credit, talking about radio propagation and shortwave listening. And today, he'll talk to us.
I started out as a TV DXer, strangely enough, as we first got our TV set in New Mexico, where I was living as a child. And we were getting some TV DX. But we already had an old Philco console radio with shortwave bands on it. So I got first into medium wave DXing and finally into shortwave. And eventually I did get an S38E as my first shortwave receiver and hammered an HQ160 later on and various others since then.
So you definitely know what it is to warm up a room with tubes.
Yes, although not anymore.
No, I'm afraid that those days are probably gone, although a lot of people still enjoy collecting those old boat anchors. And if you can get one that's in fairly good working order, they still perform amazingly.
Right.
TVDX, that's very interesting because with the advent of digital television, is TVDXing still even a possibility? Because I know it's either if it's digital, it's either all there or it's all not. And I know in those days with the analog signals, especially like on Channel 2 and some of those channels, it was probably a lot better propagation compared to now.
Yeah, it is still possible, although it is, as you say, much more difficult. There's some guys who have racked up quite a number of DTV DX catches by sporadic E on the lower channels. I've had very little luck with that. It's really because I don't have the best antennas, but you could still get tropospheric TVDX on UHF or even VHF. I've had it out to 600 miles or so in Minnesota on occasion.
Now, did you actually go on once you had this interest? Did you go on to get some kind of a degree at a university somewhere? Or?
Yes, but it really had nothing to do with that. My degree was in broadcast journalism at the University of New Mexico.
And you did get into broadcasting. Now, I was going over your Wikipedia page, which I hope is fairly accurate. I hope maybe you wrote it so that it's as accurate as it can possibly be. But I see that you actually began on Radio Canada. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, I was a contributor to the DX program on Radio Canada International Shortwave for a number of years, also on Radio Netherlands DX Jukebox.
And you also, I guess, developed other programs. You had a Spanish edition of World of Radio. Did you have actually somebody else do that with your material, or did you do it yourself?
Oh, I did it myself, just reprocessing and translating World of Radio material. That was actually for the Spanish DX program of Radio Nederland originally. So I already had the material put together for that, then I repackaged it into my own Mundo Radial.
I see, and that was on for several years, I guess?
Yes, quite a number of years. In fact, until Radio Netherlands bit the dust. The Spanish lasted longer than the English as far as my participation.
I see. World of Radio debuted in 1980 on WUOT-FM in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yes, that's where I was a full-time employee at the time.
Now, you were a broadcast journalist. You were trained as a broadcast journalist. Were you also doing news reporting there in Knoxville, or were you primarily concentrating on your DX show?
Neither. Actually, I was music director, announcing and programming classical music by that time.
But the DX was sort of an extra thing that you sort of evolved into then.
Well, I had the chance to, the production facilities and the chance to do it there. Originally, it was just fillers of variable lengths after another program, and then I eventually turned it into a regular half hour when I got it on some shortwave stations.
How did you go about getting stations interested in carrying a program like that? It seems like a good fit, but maybe at the time, maybe it was a little more of a challenge.
Well, the first one was WRNO in New Orleans, which had recently come on the air. You know, I don't recall having much of a problem getting it on or exactly what happened, but I brought it up to Joe Costello, who ran the station, and he thought it would be a good addition.
And how did you gather your material in those days? I know I've listened to your programs. I listened to several replays on your website, and we'll talk about that in a few moments. But it looks as though you maybe do have some DXers out there who provide information. I know there have been publications over the years that also give reports about sunspot activity and who's picking up what and where they are and so forth and so on. How did you evolve into all that?
Well, there were a number of DX clubs with print publications, some of them weekly or monthly, and I was involved in most of them before the Internet era. So I had lots of sources, and I've always been interested in compiling material, which is what really takes up most of my time even today, going over all these sources and pulling out info that I think is significant or interesting. Of course, most of that now is almost all that is over the Internet.
But back in those days, I guess you were what, doing phone calls or getting just regular snail mail?
Mostly snail mail. But I was publishing my own magazine, Review of International Broadcasting, and later added another one called DX Listening Digest, with more of an emphasis on the DX rather than the program angle.
When you started doing the DX reports, I would imagine that shortwave radio was a lot more vibrant than it is today. It seems like nowadays a lot of the governments have shut down their systems. It seems like it's a lot of religion, and I don't hear a whole lot else.
I'm afraid you're right. As far as actually listening to programming from different countries, there's not much left that we can hear directly or even via relay stations. Country after country just cut off shortwave or partially cut it off. You know, the BBC World Service used to be easy to hear here. It is no longer, at least not on shortwave. A few years ago, Radio Australia quit altogether, and there have been many others. In fact, the main one left from Europe that's still broadcasting in English to North America is, of all things, Romania, although they've been hinting that they may be cutting off shortwave in a few years, too.
Is it like commercial broadcasting where the people in charge decide that they can save some money? That's what I always ran into in my 40 years in radio and television, that it just seemed like if they could find a new way to make the buffalo on the nickel squeal, they would do it.
Well, most of these stations are not commercial at all, so it's a matter of government priorities. But I guess they have the same idea that they need to spend their money some other way.
So at that time, when you first began, I know you were DXing TV, and then you moved into the radio part with the shortwave and so forth. The bands must have been alive in those early years. I remember listening myself as a youngster, and I remember with my first shortwave radio, it was a Christmas present, a Radio Shack, a realistic with four bands, and put a long wire on that thing, and you just it opened the world up, didn't it?
Oh, yes. Of course, it all depended on how deeply you wanted to go into it. With a really sensitive receiver and a good antenna system, you could pull in weak domestic shortwave stations in other countries that weren't really intended to be heard abroad, or at least not very far away. That's the fun of DXing, even if you couldn't understand the language, just picking up all these little stations.
How do you go about doing that when you hear a foreign broadcast that you don't know the language? Do you have guides that you can refer to determine, let's see, if it's on that frequency, it must be whichever country and so forth?
Yes, currently there are three very excellent online frequency lists, which are updated often. So it's pretty easy to look up what should be there. Often there's more than one thing. You have to figure out which one it is. Of course, along with all this, I have been very interested in languages, foreign languages. I've studied several of them, and as a result of the shortwave involvement, can recognize many other languages that I don't really understand. So that's really helpful.
How did you go about doing that? Was there a particular trick you used, Rosetta Stone? I assume that you must have had something that worked for you.
Well, that was before that came along, I think. No, I've never tried that. I formerly studied Spanish and Portuguese mainly in high school and college, and dabbled in some other languages.
What are the ideal conditions, for example, for a very rare station? Do other stations have to be off the air? Does the propagation have to be such a way that it's just possible maybe for a couple of nights and then it vanishes? So what are some of the impediments to getting that great DX?
Those are two of the factors. You have to know about how propagation works. Certain frequencies will propagate over certain paths at certain times of day or night. If there are other stations on the same frequency, and on the lower bands, for instance, if they're in the daytime, they won't be getting out. While if there's a nighttime path between them and you, then there's a possibility. And, of course, one hopes there is not co-channel interference, but there often is.
What impact do the foreign stations have as far as do they get interfered with a lot, even, say, deliberately, not just necessarily because of another station that's nearby on the dial, but do governments sometimes throw in some jamming to make it more challenging?
Yes. Well, their objective is not to make it more challenging, of course, but to block reception in their home country. The main culprits these days are Cuba, China, and North Korea, and a few others here and there. There's a lot of jamming by Cuba of Radio Martí and U.S. other clandestine broadcasts in Spanish, which is, of course, being so close, that jamming is quite a problem for our reception of those and other stations. China uses a different tactic. They put some of their main home service program, China National Radio, primarily on many frequencies, many, many frequencies for broadcasts into China from Taiwan, the USA, and even jammed the BBC in English because so many Chinese now understand English.
But somehow, some way, a lot of people still get the message, don't they?
Yes, one hopes so. It's, of course, audience research on shortwave is rather difficult or not done at all.
What do you think? Was it just because these frequencies were available in old stations? Is that how the religious broadcasters started increasing their presence on shortwave?
Well, many of them have a part of their mission, literally, is to spread the gospel all over the world. So shortwave is a natural fit for that, being able to broadcast beyond your borders directly.
Is there any evidence of certain countries trying to jam those?
Not much. Even the Chinese don't seem to bother much with jamming religious broadcasts.
We know that back in the old days there was there were a lot of national stations on the air. Were there also independent broadcasters that were involved with the with broadcasting? Were they a commercial operation like, say, we might know here in the United States with an AM or an FM station? They have sponsors, things like that, or was it mostly the governments?
Mostly the governments. Hard-pressed to think of any commercial, you know, purely commercial shortwave station outside the U.S.
Religious stations have really taken the lead in keeping shortwave alive. What about the listenership on shortwave? Is there still a real interest in it, or have folks migrated to the digital modes like so much of the world?
I'm afraid it's the latter, although, as I was mentioned earlier, doing accurate audience research on shortwave is rather difficult. You can't really do it like domestic ratings are done. Some of the major stations do have audience research departments like the BBC and the VOA. One way to do it is to interview people coming out of the country, especially if it's a country with controlled media.
Could you take us through a normal week for yourself? I know you and I have been talking for some time about doing this interview, and again, I'm very grateful to you for taking some time out. I know that with the information that you gather. It has to be very time-consuming, and a half hour every week. Could you kind of take us through a typical week of preparation for World of Radio?
Well, it starts with going through all the Internet resources, people sending me info directly, or going through various shortwave publications. And I compile all this into a very large weekly e-publication, DX Listening Digest, which often is not complete by the time I'm ready to record World of Radio, but I have it in rough form. So I then go through that large file and pick out the important items that I'm going to mention on the air, and eventually finish up the compilation into publication form, and out it goes to my subscribers and on my website. In fact, right now I've just finished last week's DX Listening Digest. I haven't sent it out yet, which is about par for the course. I would prefer to get it finished before I do the program, but I'm always playing catch-up, it seems.
When do you normally record your show, then?
Currently it's on Thursday afternoons. That has changed over time due to various other factors, but if I do it on Thursday afternoons, it's pretty timely when people are listening, I assume, mostly on the various airings on the weekends.
I have heard you all over the dial for years, and so I know that a lot of stations have picked up your program. Do you end up having to pay them a fee to run that, or do they usually just run it gratis?
My business model, if you want to call it that, is gratis only. I figure stations should appreciate it as something that will draw an audience, even if their regular programming is something else, like religious or anything else. And so that limits the stations that will carry it, although over the years, many other shortwave stations have had it on for a while. The two main ones now in the U.S. are WRMI in Miami and WBCQ in Maine.
I was going to ask you about WBCQ. That's quite an operation up there, isn't it?
Yes, and they're currently about to go on the air with a 500-kilowatt transmitter, but I'm not counting on being on that one.
Because they have other antennas and transmitters as well that they can use?
Well, yeah, they have four, I guess it's five transmitters, but normally they have four frequencies with a relatively low power, 50 kilowatts or less.
But still, even on a good night, hopefully 50 kilowatts on shortwave on the right frequency ought to go out quite a ways.
Oh, yes. Of course, being in the northeast corner of the U.S., it so happens that their only antenna beam is toward the southwest, toward Laredo, Texas, or Mexico. So they happen to cover most of the U.S. that way.
The other stations, though, also do a pretty good job. You mentioned them. Was the one in Miami, I think, was one of them?
Yeah, WRMI. Actually, they repeat World of Radio a lot more times, many more opportunities to hear it there than on WBCQ. I think it's about a dozen times, I haven't counted lately, over a week period. But they have 14 transmitters available. At least, well, they're using most of them anyway, with all kinds of programming and all kinds of different directions.
Do they all operate at the same time, or is it usually based on the day part or whatever, and which frequencies are obviously going to work the best at what part of the day?
The latter. I think only one or two frequencies are on 24 hours. Of course, it all depends on who wants to be on and whether they're paying for airtime.
Are you also on AM and FM commercial stations in the U.S. or public stations?
Yes, quite a few. On my website, of course, I have a schedule of all of them in time order. I'm also on some radio, at least one radio reading service, the one in Columbus.
Oh, yes, okay. SoundForce, I believe it's called. Well, that's fantastic. Well, maybe we should do something here about maybe picking your program up. Do you get a good response from the blind community?
Well, first of all, I don't really solicit listener response directly, unless they're willing to contribute.
Of course. I was going to ask you about that, too. With the obviously, there is an expense involved. I'm sure that over the years you've had investments in audio consoles, tape recorders back when they were still being used. And now I'm sure you're doing a lot of stuff on computer, digital, Adobe Audition, whatever. But it's still an expense, and I was wondering how you have been able since 1980 to keep this thing alive.
people do send me some contributions, which cover most of my expenses, other than my time. Since I'm retired, I'm not really figuring out what I'm actually earning, if that's the word for it. I'm just doing what I love to do, and at least I'm not going into the red.
If you have something in this industry that you love and you can keep doing it, I think that's that in itself is very fulfilling. I'm sure you probably agree.
Right, although I have some regrets sometime about the sheer amount of time I spend doing this, which inevitably means that other things don't get done, like piles of books and magazines I want to read but don't have time for.
Are you still involved in listening to classical music at all, or do you pretty much just spend all your time reading about shortwave and DX?
Oh, yes, still listen to quite a bit of classical music. Of course, I can still do that while I'm multitasking.
Of course, and it's a wonderful way. A little bit of Mozart or Haydn in the background is a great way to actually look at written material. At least I found it always very useful. That was my first job in radio back in the early 70s, was hosting classical music on the radio at a public station in Indianapolis, and there's always kind of been a special place in my heart for that, and still get a kick out of hearing it on the radio. It's very rare, becoming more rare by the day, but at least around most areas there are still some channels that you can tune into. And the other thing too, of course, here again with the digital, it seems like there are many options available for listening to any kind of music you want.
Right. Our cable TV system, for example, has all kinds of genres, including a couple of classical channels. And at least in Oklahoma City, we do have one fully classical FM station.
We do have one here in Cincinnati, WGUC. As a matter of fact, we do run on their subcarrier, 67 kilohertz subcarrier, and we don't hear a lot, and I wish we did sometimes. It'd be nice to actually get some listener response once in a while. I do recall back at WLW, the phone would usually ring a lot. I guess that's the difference between a 50 kilowatt AM and being on a subcarrier.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, whether subcarriers are still being used much instead of an HD channel on FM.
Well, that is a very interesting question. I have heard some talk about maybe putting us on an HD channel. But I think, as always, there's always a little bit of concern about all of the copyrighted material that we use, that if you make it too available, will people be turning over and maybe not getting a subscription? That's always sort of the battle you have to face. So are you still writing quite a bit? Do you still do a lot of articles?
No, not really. I'm just spending too much time doing compiling and editing. Of course, I'm always throwing in my own comments. And I do, of course, my own monitoring and report my own loggings almost every day, but not really articles.
What are you using for listening these days?
Well, I have an ICOM R75 and a JRC NRD 545 as my prime receivers, but I'm, many portables as well. PL880 from Texon I use quite a bit, and DX398. From Radio Shack.
You mentioned portables, but I would imagine they've probably got a pretty decent antenna available to hook up to all of them.
Well, for the two main receivers, I have the long wire on one of them, and I'm using mainly a Wellbrook loop on the other.
Does the sometimes violent weather, like you've had recently in Oklahoma, does that sometimes affect your DX ability? I would think it would.
Well, of course, when there's lightning, the storm noise level gets just about intolerable, especially on the lower frequencies. And when it's really close, of course, I disconnect the outside antenna. And if I want to listen, I have to use an inside antenna.
Well, it sounds like you have a passion that is very rare, especially for the topic that you are dealing with. But it sounds like something that you've committed your life to, and obviously the response has been very positive, at least hopefully for you. Certainly, I've heard your program for many years and have always found it extremely interesting. I was usually just tuning around the bands and would happen to pick up your broadcast. But now that I know about your website and everything, I'll have to definitely check that out. And, of course, I do know that you have all of your previous episodes available on the web.
Well, not quite all of them, since there are almost 2,000 of them now, but for the last 20 years or so.
Do you still have all the original reel-to-reels that you did back in the day?
Mm, I suppose I do somewhere.
I got to ask you this, Glenn. You must have a very tolerant wife if you are married.
Actually, she helps me in the final production, getting into good, well-edited digital form.
Wow, really? I don't know that my wife would be that involved. So, looking down the road, Glenn, what's ahead? I know there's some talk. I read on one of the websites the other day, Radio Insider, something about the commission now is looking at perhaps going with digital AM on the medium wave band here in the United States, which I think might have a great future if eventually enough people can pick up the HD channels. But do you see that happening with shortwave too, or is there already some of that underway?
For many years now, there's been a shortwave version of digital called DRM, but it really hasn't caught on. There's a few stations are still broadcasting in it, at least part of the time. But consumer receivers are very hard to find. And I suspect most of the people listening to it are using software instead, and more as a hobby than as an ordinary listener.
Looking down the road, do you think in 20 years, will there still be shortwave as we know it? Or what are your thoughts about the future?
Well, it's been in steady decline for a good many years now, and I expect that will continue, I'm afraid. Of course, as more big stations give up on shortwave, that maybe leaves a better chance to hear some of the little stations, which haven't quit yet, although many of them are gone too. There used to be relatively low-power shortwave stations all over Latin America, for instance, and many countries only have one left or none at all.
Everyone talks about the decline of radio, the death of radio, I guess some people say. I don't know. I think there's still a need. Not everyone's got the internet, and it seems like we would still have a reason to do what we do every day.
Yes, and not everyone understands this, but for us, DXers and enthusiastic shortwave listeners, there's something about hearing that signal yourself direct from the transmitter through the ionosphere rather than indirectly through the internet or some relay service.
Are you also an amateur, Glenn?
No, I'm not. That's another thing I just don't have time for. I've always told myself if I should ever find myself on a remote island, I would become a ham and probably do 6-meter DX.
Well, Glenn, any final thoughts before we let you go?
Well, I'm very pleased you wanted to talk to me, and always glad to promote, if this is doing it, promote shortwave listening.
Happy to do it. Thank you for taking time out from a busy week, as usual, to spend some time with us here in Cincinnati. We definitely appreciate it. If folks need more information on you on the web, where do they need to go?
My website is worldofradio.com, and that links to everything I do, my publications and broadcasts.
That website, again, for Glenn Hauser is worldofradio.com. And again, our thanks to Glenn for joining us. Resource material came from the Monitor tribute pages. Thank you for joining us. I'm Charlie Van Sant, and this is Monitor on WRRS. ¶¶